Welcome to CICK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CICK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CICK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CICK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com, or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio. Telkwa is a small village of a few hundred people along Highway 16 in northern BC. Life along the Telkwa River is peaceful, and people vacation from all over the world to fish for steelhead in the river and its estuaries, or enjoy the many hikes and nature walks available to all residents. The Babines are a mountain range enjoyed throughout the year, either on foot or on cross-country skis. Understandably, people want to protect the way of life in Telkwa. If you read this story on the grassroots organization, What Matters in Our Valley, or listened on CICK News, you will know that this way of life is potentially at risk if the environmental assessment passes and Allegiance Coal, the Australian coal mining company, successfully secures the standards needed to begin mining for coal in the Telkwa area. The project is called Telkwa Coal and will produce approximately 775,000 to 825,000 tons of steelmaking coal annually, which could go higher, with a mine life of about 25 years, including construction, operations, and reclamation phases. The location of the proposed mine site is 7 kilometers outside of Telkwa, and the mine would run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, once it reaches full capacity. Mining coal is not a new industry in the Bulkley Valley or even Telkwa, dating back to 1901 when coal was first discovered in Telkwa at Goathorn Creek. In 1918, the first official coal production began from the McNeil Mine. The Gething Mine was the last production in Telkwa, which closed in 1986. Minolta Coal Limited came to the scene in Telkwa to assess the viability of a mine in 1997, but ultimately withdrew due to low coal prices. Tennis, or Allegiance Coal, has opened an office in the Telkwa Main Village offices and has been here since 2018. They are available and accessible to the public, according to CEO Mark Gray when speaking to me for an interview. Gray commented on the economic impacts of the proposed Telkwa coal mine for not only the coal mine or its employees, of which would reach approximately 163, but also for the businesses supported by the thriving economy in the Bulkley Valley. When asked about the potential risks of the environmental acid rock drainage and high selenium levels in the Telkwa River, Gray was confident that the likelihood of hazardous levels of pollutants in the river were infinitesimal in chance. Even when presented with examples of hazardous pollutants created by mines corrupting rivers in places such as the small Mount Washington mine in the Tsolum River, or the damage to the Taku River in the Tlingit First Nation territory 60 years after the mine closure. Some residents, especially those affected by the Canfor mill closure, will be thrilled with the steady work if the mine is constructed, whereas others are working to protect the natural way of life in Telkwa. As I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, I conducted an interview with Nancy Cody and Jay Gildon of What Matters in Our Valley, the grassroots organization, asking for much more environmental assessment and awareness to be done before the proposed Telkwa coal mine can actually go through. Much of that is being proposed to the Environmental Assessment Office of British Columbia. And now you will hear from Mark Gray, the CEO of Telkwa Coal, when I spoke to him in March of 2023.
Mark Gray, CEO of Telkwa Coal.
So what are the economic benefits of the proposed Telkwa coal mine?
I guess at a micro level, so mm-hmm. at a community level, the obvious things which spring to mind, jobs, long-term sustainable employment. The current proposed mine has a mine life of about 22 years. That can be extended within the existing deposit to another 15 years, so quite a significant mine life that creates long-term employment. The generation, obviously, of discretionary income within Bulkley Valley. There will, for example, be something in the order of 163 full-time employees at peak production. It takes about 2 to 3 years to reach peak production. And on top of that, you know, you could, I think, reliably double that number in relation to contract services and contract suppliers, also predominantly within Bulkley Valley. So it will possibly, ahead of government, be the biggest employer here for a considerable period of time. Then, of course, there are the taxes and the royalties to the province, to the federal government, to local and regional governments as well.
And can you walk me through the impact on the community of Telkwa if the mine is built on the proposed site as well? So aside from economic, what other impacts will it have on the community?
And of course, the community is wider than Telkwa, right? Well, the BC province has an environmental assessment process, which you're probably very aware of, if not familiar with. And that identifies many value components within a particular project area, whatever the project may be, forestry, mining, property, agriculture. It identifies value components given the area. And they vary widely. The obvious are water, noise, air, fish habitat, wildlife, terrestrial soils, and even social, demographic, and social economic components as well. And then we spend many years undertaking baseline studies of those value components. And when we complete that, our independent consultants do an effects assessment on those VCs, value components, and that forms the basis of our EA application. Mm-hmm. Our EA application is in a position to assess effects and impact on those value components. Mm-hmm.
There has been some criticism that there hasn't really been enough engagement with the community, or that the community feels like they've had enough adequate time to ask questions, share concerns on the impacts of the proposed mine. So what are your plans now, especially that people can gather more safely, to inform the public and feel like you're connecting with them?
Oh, that's a great question. Of course, the environmental assessment process is regulated in terms of the level of engagement with the local community and the nature of that engagement. So that is legislated, and that is managed by the Environmental Assessment Office BC, right? Now, over and above that, we established this office 5 years ago. We have advertised its presence. I moved here 6 years ago. The CEO, founder of the company, no better person to face the hard questions. And I've been doing that for more than 5 years. We held several open houses ourselves. When we very first arrived, when we set up this office, we set up an open house to gauge general opinion. We hadn't worked out what the mine plan would look like, what it would be, its scale of production. We had some ideas. We hadn't worked out where our transport routes would be. We hadn't actually even worked out which deposit in the Telkwa coalfield we were going to develop, because there were three, and which one we would apply for an EA. So we got initial feedback from the local community, where the haul roads might be, where the rail siding might be. and what even what the size of the mine might be, you know, in terms of its annual production, you know, how many 100,000 or million tons per annum would be produced. And off the back of that input, you know, we gradually developed the mine plan that we have today, and that is the subject of the EA application. We had follow-up open house, and this is before we actually filed what we call a project description with the EAO. We had another open house, shared what we thought is what the project would look like, identified some of the takeaways that we took from community comment, and got feedback again. So we've held three of our own during the course of the last 5 years. So, I mean, as far as our own reach out, outreach is concerned, we've, you know, we've gone way beyond what we're required at law to do. And, you know, I'm here available pretty much all the time. So I'm a little bit miffed when people say, you know, that there hasn't been much consultation and engagement. Like I said, I've, you know, we haven't met before, but, you know, I've been wandering the streets and a part of many aspects of the community for quite some time.
What about with What Matters in Our Valley? How do you work with that group?
So we had a conference call with them today. You know, we had a conversation today with specifically on caribou.
Yeah.
They had some questions. And we dialed in our caribou expert who's based in PG, Kathy from EDI Consulting. And my chief operating officer was here yesterday and today as well. So, you know, What Matters in the Valley, any other special interest groups, were available to them all the time.
Intelco Coal Project's own overview on your website, it claims that groundwater use in the immediate vicinity of the mine site is not expected to have any measurable effect on private wells or the Telco River. But what, according to Intelco Coal Project, is a measurable effect?
I'm probably not the person, you know, getting to that level of detail, and forgive me, you know, I just run the company and I'm not, you know, dodging a question, but that level of technical detail, I really do rely on, you know, on my consultants and my technical staff, so forgive me.
Are they in the office?
No, Dan was the one that flew back to
Vancouver today.
To Vancouver, he's the chief operating officer.
Okay.
Our environmental manager, Ashley. Ashley used to live here at Lake Tahoe, but her and Cody have moved to Francois Lake. They do all of our water monitoring for us.
Okay.
But you know that you know, those sorts of questions with all of our consultants, and we use a large number of the skill set in Bulkley Valley to do our baseline studies and a lot of our monitoring. And those people, you know, we have a very much an open book policy. So anything that they have gathered in terms of raw data, primary data, is to be made available to the community in any form of conversation or what have you.
Okay, so maybe this is something, as the CEO, that you can speak on. So there have been mines in the region that have contaminated groundwater and it's leached into the surrounding environment. Some to mention are the Tulsiqua Chief Mine and then also the small Mount Washington mine on Salem River. So I guess what is important and worth discussing in... So what I want to know is, if you can guarantee that this mine won't contaminate waterways and groundwater in the immediate area, and how you would be able to guarantee that, what sort of science or who you're working with that can help guarantee that?
A few things in that question, or questions. The first thing is that all of the information is available in our EA application on the BC EAO website. It's a powerfully comprehensive document,
yeah.
But all the baseline data and the effects assessment reports of our independent consultants is all there. So that information is available. How do we guarantee that the mine will operate the way we think it will, in terms of the quality of water discharged, surface water discharge back into the system. We use best science, we use best engineering, we use the skills and capabilities of reputable firms who do our mine design work and do our impact assessment work. And then we subject ourselves to probably one of the most rigorous environmental assessment processes globally in BC, highly regarded globally in terms of the way in which it manages the environmental assessment process for mining projects in particular. And it's even got more challenging with the new legislation.
Yeah.
We go through that process, which the regulators require us to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get through it, then that is reflects the capability of the application.
Okay, so in understanding, of course, that there is rigorous assessment, because I mean it's undeniable that we are currently approaching, if not deep inside of, a climate crisis, and that and coal frightens people. So when you're looking at the assessment, also that the assessment regulations and parameters did change, and that there were prior to 2020 regulatory standards for mines, and then it changed, but that not all of Telkwa coals were necessarily had to be compared to the newer standards. And I know that you've chosen some, such as the importance of water, which is why I wanted to go back to that. But this mine has applied to discharge 25 times more selenium and heavy metals than what would be proposed to be the safest. So I guess what my question is, why want to, or why apply to discharge more selenium because of the old standards?
I need to reflect on what the water quality model says. That's something off the top of my head. I know we have some exceedances and mm-hmm. some trace elements, including selenium. There are some heavy metals which on baseline data exceed BC standards. Historically, any mine application has an exceedance of a trace element, is assessed on the basis of its environment, because the thresholds, the BC thresholds for trace elements are a standard set of numbers which apply across the province. Yet every area of the province is its own environment. As I said, there are already trace elements on baseline data in the streams which exceed BC thresholds, yet they have no impact on water quality, on fish habitat. I mean, they have been that way for centuries. So ultimately, where there are exceedances, they are assessed on a site-specific basis. And that's an exercise that mm-hmm. that we go through with the EAO in the review that we are currently in. We assess certain exceedances on a site specific, and that is really simply to acknowledge. So typically, mines, be they coal or precious metals or whatever it might be, they all have a level of exceedance against the BC standard template. Right. All right. But you have to go through that site-specific assessment. We also, under the new Act, and this was brought in, look at best alternative technologies to mitigate any exceedances which, on a site-specific basis, are not acceptable. And so that's some additional work that we have to do transitioning to this new legislation.
And that's spraying the loads before they leave, like, is it
whatever water treatment technologies, you know, rather than considering these technologies after the event, you know, when the mine's closed down and it's all too late. Well, so I guess it's never too late, because you can go back and rehabilitate potentially, but rather than do it at the end, you know, the new legislation says to proponents like ourselves, well, we want you to consider this at the start. So that's some new work which we have to do, and we're working with ERM and some other SRK consultants on looking at the best alternative technologies to mitigate exceedances
before.
Yeah, and it may well be that one or some of that technology is a condition of our application.
With all these rules and all these assessments and groups, reports, statistics, scientists, environmentalists, the environment, everything that's involved in this, why is this what you want to do?
As a company?
Just like as the person, as a CEO of a coal mine company, what is it that draws you to this?
Well, I mean, Let's talk about the coal first.
Sure.
So me and my investors who came on this journey with me 8 years ago, we believe in the long-term demand for blast furnace steel. That, you know, we believe in it, and society simply cannot do without it. Renewable energy cannot do without blast furnace steel. There are new technologies being developed which will, in the course of time, replace coking coal as the reducing agent of iron ore, such that it will no longer be necessary. But, you know, my view, that is several decades away. So we believe in that. Tolkwa coal is one of those coals which contributes to you know, development of blast furnace steel. It's located extremely close to Prince Rupert. And Prince Rupert, as a coal port, is very close to Northeast Asia steel mills, Japan, and South Korea in particular. So for me as a project, it makes enormous sense. You know, location is important.
Yeah.
The geology of this deposit is very, very simple. We're not mining in the Canadian Rockies, right? We're not up on the sides of a mountain pushing, you know, waste rock off the edge of the mountain. It's relatively, you know, it has challenges because it's got lots of rivers and you know, and the has a world-class steelhead fishing industry. You know, we understand that.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, too, that that's what is so important and what is worth protecting is the natural beauty of a place like Telco, the Bulkley Valley. I mean, so much of northern BC, there's a reason that people want to come and have their vacations here because of the, you know, access to wildlife and scenery and all of that. So Tocqueville admits that its tailing ponds dams could put 200 lives in jeopardy in the event of a dam failure. Despite this risk, Tocqueville has not designed the dams to meet Canadian Dam Association standards for worst case earthquake and weather events. Worst case. So at what point do you say that you've done enough to protect the Telco River, aquatic life, and wildlife of the surrounding area, not to mention the people living in the area?
So we don't have a tailings dam. Mm. All right. Tailings dams are more associated with hard rock mining, where you have noxious chemicals extracted from the metallurgy,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be locked up in a non-discharge pond forever. So we don't have that.
Right.
But we have water management facilities. We capture surface water which comes into contact with the waste rock, because it's the rock that is the dangerous beast, not the coal. And when you mine it, you expose that rock to oxygen,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the heavy metals, as you mentioned, are released. Now, based on our water quality model, we don't think that will be to very high levels, and there are some exceedances against BC threshold, but as I discussed before, we're going through a site-specific assessment. We do have some of our rock is potentially acid drainage.
Yeah.
So some of our rock, and it's very clearly identified, it's about one third of all our waste material, is high in sulfur, and therefore once it's exposed to oxygen, it has the potential to create acid. Our mine plan is centered really about burying that material underwater before it has the opportunity to acidize.
Okay.
For the oxygen and the water to reach that pH level where it's acidized, and that material is contained in a wet environment. It's covered with soil, and there it remains forever. In the course of time, the acidity in that water will slowly, the pH level will just naturally get back to a normal level, mm-hmm. but that takes a long time.
Yeah. I guess, too, what happens after, you were talking about 22 years of the kind of lifespan of the project, or tack on 15 years of that. So let's just say after 40 years, how is the mine site being maintained in order to make sure that the buried rock is still safe and the pH levels are balanced? Who maintains that?
So it's a natural process. The water table remains above where that pond is built, and it remains saturated.
But in the case of a drought,
It's modeled in I can't recall, but I think it's 1 in 300 year event is how it's modeled. Not in a 1 in 100 year, but I think we modeled it in 1 in 300 year event.
Okay. I've taken up a lot of your time, so let's just finish with this, if you would. Would Tocqueville agree to a open discussion with chosen scientists, as well as scientists chosen from community organizations such as What Matters in the Valley, to have an open discussion, open forum, that people can come and listen to the discussions? Because I feel like people, some of the questions that I'm asking, I know they're in the environmental assessment. Radio is a lottery, and it accesses and is able to, people are able to find it and hopefully hear a voice, understand the reasoning or someone's argument for or against something like a coal mine. Would Tocqueville be interested or open to that?
But we are open and available,
mm-hmm.
Every day.
Yeah.
So long as I have reasonable notice,
mm-hmm.
I can organize my consultants to sit down with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now to participate in an open forum, I don't think that's a good idea. Generally because in that environment, emotions ultimately take control.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, you're putting people at risk. You know, firstly of abuse, and then of course emotional effect and impact by exposing certainly like our consultants or even my staff to that environment, and it's historically well known that an environment like that generally heads in that direction, wrongly or rightly. So you know, I won't subject my staff to that, or our consultants. I wouldn't subject any human to that level of emotional risk, psychological risk. It's not healthy. However, I am here. You know, my CEO is here every month. Our staff, our consultants are available. And they are, today we had a scientific discussion with members of What Matters in the Valley. I wasn't there. That's not my skill set. I know enough to be dangerous, but you know, yeah, I have other things to do within the company, and we remain that way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your time today.
That's okay, my pleasure.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.